Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm your host this evening, Mr. Jesse Billington, and tonight I've seconded from the Inside F2 Podcast, Fraser Ford. Buddy, how are we?
I'm all good, thank you, Jesse. Yeah, how's things with you? All good?
Oh, flat out, but looking forward to the F1 season coming back. Obviously, we've got Drive to Survive coming out this weekend after we've recorded it. And Australia is just around the corner. I think we are just over a week away from Australia coming back. And of course, F2 and F3, we've got all the feeder series kicking it off too. So a cracking way to start off the season. But we've been away for a good while here on the Undercut Podcast, and there is a lot of news that we ought to dive into. It's been a very busy winter season. So we've got extensions for circuits, we've got drivers making moves, new broadcasters coming on board for series, and of course there's been a bit of racing action as well. We've seen the Dakar rally, and we will eventually mention the 24 hours of Daytona. But we'll kick off with one of the biggest stories that broke over the break, and that is that the FIA has banned swearing. It has finally happened. The ban was brought through on a snap e-vote, despite a lot of people from within the organization disagreeing with it. There's no consultation with stakeholders or the GPDA or the FIA's own driver commission. Speaking of GPDA, worth noting, Carlos Sainz is now the director of that group. It's also not just swearing. It's words, deeds, or writing that cause moral loss or injury to the FIA, its bodies, members, or executive officers. And I really do wonder who that could refer to. Open to interpretation there. A first offence will cost a driver €10,000. The second offence is €20,000 as a fine and a suspended 1 month suspension. The third offence is a €30,000 fine plus a 1 month suspension and a deduction of championship points. Importantly, this also applies to a 2 year rolling period. So if you swear in Australia, that will still be hanging over you until the end of the 2026 season, which is a horrifying thing to think about. These penalties are also being brought into the feeder series. This is being applied to pretty much everything the FIA oversees, which means that the first person to be hit with these fines was Adrian Formeau over in the after a challenging stage on Rally Sweden. He swore in a post-stage interview, was promptly fined €10,000, and then the World Rally Drivers Alliance, which is basically GPDA for gravel, they released a statement on that matter and said, yeah, we're not happy with this. We don't like this. It's a very well-written statement and well worth a read. And like the GPDA, it questions, where is the money from these fines going? And it would like a bit of transparency. So what do we think about this, the language ban that Ben Salim has forced through?
Listen, I think first and foremost, I think we've got to acknowledge both sides of the argument, right? I do partially understand that we should be setting a good example for young karters or young people in motorsport. Absolutely. So I do understand it from that perspective. However, Jesse, I mean, it just seems a little bit silly, doesn't it? We don't want to, I think part of the reason that Formula One has boomed over the last little while is because we're really seeing the drivers' personalities. And, you know, for years, we saw drivers who were so well PR trained that they almost didn't have personalities. They were almost like robots. And with the induction, you've mentioned Drive to Survive earlier on in the introduction there. And, you know, Drive to Survive was, well, Liberty Media, let's give Liberty Media some credit here. You know, we've really started to see drivers' personalities coming out and drivers, you know, being their authentic selves. So I do worry that then a ban on swearing could lead to drivers saying, right, okay, we're just going to go back to being PR robots and we're not going to see their personalities anymore. And I think that's what's, you know, drawn in so many fans over the last few years. Drive to Survive has been absolutely brilliant for Formula One. It's a split opinion, of course, but in my opinion, it's been really, really positive. You've seen someone like Daniel Ricciardo, I'm not going to repeat what he said at the start of the second series, but you know what he said. Netflix are anyway. I love to see that. I don't want to see drivers, you know, going back to being PR robots. So I understand it in press conferences. I think that's fair in press conferences that there should be a bit of a ban there. Do I want to see it in general? I definitely don't want to see swearing taken away from the team radio. Definitely not. That, you know, drivers are emotional. We want to see their emotion. Do you know? I don't know. What do you think, Jesse?
I think you're right when you say that I don't think drivers should be allowed or there should be a sort of a leeway given when it's in a sort of formatted press environment. I think if it's immediately after a race, if it's during the race or a motorsports event, I think there's got to be that freeway. Because also bear in mind that a lot of these drivers, they do not speak the broadly broadcast language. English, we are fortunate to accept that it is the language in which these sports are broadcast for a great number of sort of stations and channels. And these drivers are often speaking their second or third language. So they are going to be picking up these sort of swear words and not understanding full connotation of them, the full impact it has, and it will slip out. I think Zhou Guanyu is a great example of this because he picked up a weird amount of sort of northern slang when he was doing his karting and junior stuff in the UK. He spent a lot of it based around Sheffield, Leeds, right up in the north. So it was very strange. But it's the way that people assimilate their sort of second and third languages. I think in structured press conferences, I think that there is a fair sort of assumption that drivers will behave appropriately. They are at that moment working for the PR of themselves and their team, and I think it is fair to argue they should be putting their best foot forward. I can appreciate they'll be annoyed, especially if a race, a stage, an event hasn't gone their way. But at the same time, like you said, they are role models to a growing audience. There's got to be a balance struck somewhere, but I don't think €10,000 is small fry to Formula One drivers, but 20, €30,000 is quite a big amount of money when you're getting into the feeder series, Formula Two, Formula Three, the smaller rally championships. That is a large sum of money, especially when you can get into some of the lower tiers of FIA rallying with a car that doesn't cost much more than that third level offense. It's quite a big number in some aspects.
I think the point that you raised at the beginning of this segment around the transparency over where the money is going, I think that's a really crucial point in this, that the FIA aren't actually disclosing where the money is going. And do you remember when the DDPA released that statement at the back end of last, was it back end of last year? Or was it
Back in
middle
the
of last
last year,
year?
it was, I think
Yeah.
it was around Brazil time,
It
possibly.
was, wasn't it? Yeah, and that was a bit, a key part of that message was around the transparency. And I think that for me, you know, they're going to bring in a ban on the swearing. Okay, fine, let's accept it. But in return, let's have a bit of transparency about where that money is going, because we don't want to see that money. You know, I'm not gonna say where it could potentially be going, but we do want to know that the money is being reinvested potentially into grassroots motorsport, for example. It's being, you know, reinvested into a good cause. So I think that is a, yeah, for me, I'd really like to see that transparency from the FIA.
Yeah, without wanting to dive down a potential rabbit hole of sort of theories. But if you look at where the FIA prize giving was held last year in
Yeah.
Rwanda, Max Verstappen did a bit of community service there. I think this was following on from language used in a press conference. And this might sound a bit strangely critical, but also when you bear in mind UK immigration law and what happened with a bunch of people that we started exiling from the country, shipping them off to Rwanda for interesting business purposes, you do begin to question that when all of a sudden the FIA says it's got a grassroots motorsport set up in Rwanda, you're like, so you're just pouring money into something that nobody's really paying attention to. And the phrase slush fund starts to appear. But anyway,
It wouldn't be the first time that a governing body has done something like that, would it? FIFA, sorry. Yeah, so
It wouldn't surprise me. We've seen it with other sports, and Formula One and FIA has a lot of money swilling around, and where there's money, there's corruption. So we'll move on. Anyway, Formula One over the winter break also agreed a 6-year contract extension with the Belgian Grand Prix. On the face of it, hooray. This isn't, however, six more races for Spa-Francorchamps. While 2026, 27, 29, and 31 will host Belgian Grand Prix at Spa, there's no word on where 2028 and 2030 races will be held. Zolder is a likely replacement if it will specifically be a Belgian Grand Prix on those leap years. The circuit hosted F1 previously, 1973, 75 through 82, and then again in 84, though it is currently only grade two listed, not the needed grade one. Also, only 4 kilometers long, it'd be the second shortest circuit on the calendar after Monaco, just shorter than Zandvoort by 259 meters. Unless those two leap years means the Belgian Grand Prix is going to be going on rotation, which begs the question, with what? Zandvoort, Portimão, Mugello, Le Castellet. Chances are it'll be another shit tip of a US Grand Prix street track, but we live in hope.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I was confused about this in the initial statement. As you say, it says 6-year extension for the Belgian Grand Prix, but then only announced Spa for 4 years. And my initial reaction was, oh, they're just going to do a rotation between with another race outside of Belgium, because I think that's the kind of the direction that Formula One wanted to take it. There are so many circuits around the world that want to host Formula One races right now. So the only way you're going to be able to do that is two ways: expand the calendar, which we're already up to 24 races, which is a lot when you think about the personnel that have to travel around the world with Formula One. Or you start rotating races on a biannual basis. And I think my initial reaction was, oh, they're just going to start rotating the Belgian Grand Prix with another Grand Prix, and the Belgian Grand Prix will happen on a biannual basis. But as you say, it was a 6-year extension, so it's a little bit confusing, not quite clear. But hopefully we'll have some clarity on that over the next little while, because I, Spa is one of my favourite tracks on the calendar. I think it is for a lot of people. It's historic. It's obviously so much has happened in Spa over the years, and it's a great circuit as well, isn't it? So much entertainment. I'd like to see it stay. Was I surprised to see it, well, not see it every single year on the Formula One calendar? No, I probably wasn't. But yeah, let's wait and see on this one. It's a really interesting one.
Yeah, if we stick with the corruption theme, maybe we'll see a return of the Vietnamese Grand Prix, because the reasons behind why that disappeared all of a sudden were also very interesting. But speaking of circuits, Monaco is set to see more mandatory pit stops. Last year's race saw most of the pit stops actually being completed under a red flag period. The new rules that have been recently announced bring in a second stop for this race alone, hopefully opening up a new wave of strategies. The drive comes in a bit of an odd bid to make the blue ribboned race of the calendar a bit more exciting. Do you think it's an exciting idea or sort of worn out of worn out?
I like it because for me, listen, I love Monaco. I've loved Monaco since I was a kid watching Formula One growing up. Again, another historic circuit, so much history involved with Monaco. If I'm totally honest, the Monaco Grand Prix over the last few years has probably, well, I say last few years, the last little while has probably been a little bit boring. The cars are too big for it now, aren't they? If we're being totally honest, you don't see much overtaking. There's probably only one overtaking opportunity on the entire circuit. So I was glad to see this. I think it's a nice change. I think it's good for Formula One to be trying something new. Whether it works is a different story. Just because there's more pit stops doesn't necessarily mean that there's going to be more overtaking or more entertainment. There will be extra opportunities to undercut or overcut. Whether you find undercutting or overcutting, I know this is the Undercut podcast, but whether you find that a source of entertainment compared to overtaking is a different conversation. But I like the fact they're trying something new, and I think let's wait and see. For me, I think I would like to see, potentially, this is controversial, but a few adaptations to the Monaco circuit to see. I think that is the solution, potentially. But you know what? Let's give a two-stop race. Let's give it a try and see what happens. So I don't know what your thoughts are on that, Jesse.
I think it's definitely going to shake things up a bit. I think going to see teams deploying the strategy in vastly different ways. What we see often with Grand Prix is the idea that we try and do it as a one stopper, because that way it is the quickest way around the circuit. You lose so much time through there. But because the sort of speed around Monaco is that bit lower, you effectively lose a bit less time while going through the pit stops, unless you're Valtteri Bottas. But the net result is that you can sort of play around with these strategies a bit more and opt for something a little bit different. I don't know if they've said if they're enforcing the use of all three tire compounds, all three dry tire compounds. That would be a really good way of shaking things up. So you've got to run a hard, a medium, and a soft at or some point during the race. So we'll see how it pans out. I'm excited to see how it's implemented, but I am glad that Charles Leclerc has got his home race win before they start mucking with the race. So we'll see where it goes from there. But word from inside the design and development tunnels at RB is that the new car does actually come up a hell of a lot smaller than the current ones. So 2026 onwards, we're going to see cars that are better able to joust around the tighter circuits. Monaco, yet to be proven, but Hungary, certainly.
It's what we want to see, isn't it? Smaller cars and V10 engines. I think that's what we all want, right? So.
Oh, they keep touting the V10s coming back because they're like, oh, just stick sustainable fuel in it, then we can do away with all that. And I'm like, yes, let's do that. Please do that. If you've
Yeah, exactly
ever
that.
had the chance to enjoy a V12 or a V10 in Formula One car at full chat, it is something special.
It's music to the ears, isn't it? So I think Paddy
Indeed.
Lowe's working on that at the moment, isn't he? So Paddy Lowe, keep doing your thing, my man. We want to see
Yes.
the V10 or the V12 back in Formula One. So.
Zero Petroleum, I know. Aramco, I know. Sunoco. There's lots of petroleum and fuel companies that are dabbling away with these sustainable fuels. And I've run a couple in road cars, and they are quite interesting. Smell strange, though. Anyway, we'll move on to something that possibly doesn't smell strange, but does smell a bit funny. Is Franco Colapinto moving to Alpine as their test and reserve driver? And this is an interesting move from the French outfit, as they also signed Ryo Hirakawa and Paul Aron for these reserve roles. There's building discourse around how long Doohan has got in the role to prove himself before being at risk of being replaced with a driver who's got a bit more, but ultimately not a lot of experience in Formula One floating around now. That pressure and plan is sort of mounting up. Early suggestions from inside the sport and inside the media pool make that Doohan has six races of this season to prove his worth, so good thing he's getting his home race out of the way early. On top of that, Mercado has joined the team as a relatively significant sponsor on the front sort of barge boards, just under sort of the start of the nose behind the front wheels. And that is a sort of prominent sponsor on the Williams car during Colapinto's tenure there. So it's interesting how they've jumped ship. You don't sign on as to sponsor a team just because you have a tie to their reserve driver. There's a lot going on there. Equally, one of the bigger conspiracy theories at the moment is Alpine is actually up for sale. If you've spent any time looking at their junior series, who they're backing, or more importantly, who they're pulling the plug on, we notice that Abby Pulling has lost her backing. I think that Victor Martins has recently also lost his backing for Alpine. They are sort of tying up a few loose ends here and there, and possibly cinching their belt a little bit. So equally, if you do have a sponsor come along, you're not going to say no.
Listen, first and foremost, I want to start with Jack Doohan. I mean, I feel really sorry for Jack Doohan in a situation. He's worked hard for years and years to get to Formula One. He gets to Formula One, he gets one race in Abu Dhabi, and that's it. The spotlight's already on him as potentially losing his seat, which is it's ridiculous, isn't it? How things change. I think Jack Doohan is a very good driver, and I think I think he'll do really well at Alpine at the start of the season. How long he remains in that seat is a different story. Obviously, Colapinto, first and foremost, is he did a really good job at Williams last year. I know he had a few accidents, but he did do a really good job when he stepped into that Williams team or that Williams seat unexpectedly. To replace Logan Sargeant. I think the likelihood is that Colapinto will end up being in that Alpine seat. How soon that happens, I think, depends on Jack Doohan's form. If Jack Doohan has an absolute stinker in the first three, four races of the season, we could see it as early as, within, well, not within the first, I think around round five, round six, I think that's when they'll start to look at it, won't they? So I think Jack Doohan will do a good job. So I think it might be a little bit longer than that. Will they do half a season with Jack Doohan, half a season with Colapinto to compare potentially? I don't know. But money does talk as well. As you say, Colapinto brings a lot of backing from Argentina. There are a lot of eyeballs from Argentina on Formula One with Colapinto in and around the sport. So I think there's various different factors to this one. I did see today that Flavio Briatore was essentially saying when it was Benetton, Michael Schumacher. I think he described it as the actor. He was like, Michael Schumacher was the actor. When it was Renault, Fernando Alonso was the actor. And then he said, we're currently looking for our actor. So maybe Pierre Gasly's seat is even under threat, which, potentially not obviously for 2025, but potentially for 26, 27. His seat could even be under threat. So, yeah, let's wait and see. There's so many unknowns with that specific team at the moment. Are they going to sell the team? If they sell the team, will Flavio Briatore and Ollie Oakes still be there? No one knows. So, lots of unknowns with that. I hope Jack Doohan gets a fair crack at it. If he does perform, I hope he keeps the seat. If he's maybe has a little bit of an underwhelming start to the season, I can probably see that change happening sooner rather than later.
Yeah, obviously, last year we saw Alpine closing up their engine facilities at Viry. They've sort of been really tidying a lot of things up in and around that as a sort of brand. So, yeah, there's questions that are going to be circulating for a while. But I don't say this with any sort of ill will on Jack Doohan. Really nice guy and a very interesting background in sort of how he got into racing and a very talented driver. We saw some great glimpses of him in Formula 2 as he was coming through the ranks. I'm excited to see what he does, although I do think he made a critical error having his team photograph taken after shaving his head, because all the header boards at the garages throughout the season will be him with the buzz cut. I'm like, oh, you've got
Yeah.
such a good mop on you, man. And then just.
Mate, he has such a good haircut, right? What is that about where he keeps on cutting it, he keeps on shaving his head? I'm like, mate, what are you doing? Like, just keep the bonnet. Like,
Yeah, some would speculate that it may be solidarity with Pierre Gasly, who recently enjoyed a holiday to Turkey, maybe.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
There is again more speculation swirling around Alpine, but we won't dive into that.
I'm gonna have to join him soon, Jesse. My hairline is going a little bit as well. So listen, if it isn't solidarity, then when I join them out into there you
Help
go.
us in. Start using it, my friend. It really does work. It's a miracle cure for me. It's why I've got a relatively good line that down the side.
I hope they're sponsoring the podcast, by the way, with that free publicity you've just given them. So
They're not. I do need to reach out to them and say, yo, you guys want to sponsor this, because yeah, we'll see. As I've always said, if they were going to be my if I was going to have an F1 team, Alpecin probably would be my title sponsor, because it's a really nice set of colors. But anyway, we're getting sidetracked. Speaking of sponsorship money, team sustainability, Haas have finally been able to do a run with a previous car test, and backing from Toyota Gazoo Racing has bolstered the team to the point that they've been at Jerez with Ocon Behmann and Rotomo Miata out in the 2023 car. Not necessarily a sparkling one from their back catalogue, but equally not really a dog. So it's a promising start to their season, and not just a season for 2025, but also as they build ahead to 2026. If they're a team that can now do this testing, that can spend time and importantly in Formula One, the money on it, this is great. Sauber and Racing Bulls are also set to do some testing at Imola. I know Racing Bulls have previously been out and done some filming days, so they might still have their testing to go. But better still for Haas, obviously, we've seen the incredible news that they announced Laura Mueller as Ocon's race engineer, the first woman to ever officially step into such a role in the sport's 75 years. Previously, we have had drivers sort of being race engineered-ish by wives, spouses, partners in sort of the formative days of the sport through the 50s and 60s. There are great shots of Jackie Stewart's wife with the stopwatch and the clipboard. But this is the first time we've seen a woman officially step into this role, which is genuinely astounding to see. And it's not like this is something new from Haas. They've actually proven to be fairly sound at supporting women through the sport. Their backing of Chloe Chambers was unwavering, and their team principal Ayo Komatsu said of the new appointment, if you look at how many female engineers we have in the office, it's definitely more than before. But it's not like I chose Laura because she is female. We don't care about nationality, gender. It really doesn't matter, because what matters is work. How can you fit into the team, and how can you maximize performance? So this is a just good news all round. And also, this is the first year in which, or 2024 rather, is the first year in which the team had been profitable. So great news for Jean Haas as well.
Yeah, listen, Gene Haas's bank account will be happy about that, won't it? Yeah, listen, I think all of those are good news stories, aren't they? The fact that Haas are an interesting one. Since they've joined the sport, they've always been, well, had the smallest budget on the grid, haven't they? And I think it's brilliant that they're finally getting to a point. And I think the cost cap has really helped teams like Haas, for example. I think it really has leveled the playing field, and it has. We've seen the grid get closer and closer. I think the grid this year will be separated by, we're looking at probably half a second, between half a second and 8 tenths, I think, for the entire grid, which is the closest it's ever been in Formula One. And I think the cost cap was a brilliant idea, and it really has worked in that sense, and it's benefited teams like Haas. In terms of, I think it's great that we've got a woman engineer. I think that's absolutely brilliant. As you say, it's astounding that it hasn't happened in the 75 years of Formula One. But I'm really looking forward to hearing that this year, that relationship with Esteban Ocon. And yeah, I think it's another good news story in the world of Formula One, isn't it? And it's a step in the right direction. So.
It's great news as we sort of move forwards into the brighter sunlit uplands of the sport. Other good news is that Williams have also seen a positive uptick. Obviously, we're recording this after testing, where some of their lap times were looking quite positive. Certainly, Carlos Sainz getting up to speed in that car very quickly. But this is the first year that Williams have had a title sponsor, and certainly the first time in 5 years at least. Atlassian have joined the team after half a decade in the doldrums following the outfit's ill-fated pairing with Rocket, which was a 3D phone company based in sort of northeastern Europe. Never saw anyone using one of their phones apart from in the paddock at Formula One events, where it was usually George Russell and Robert Kubica holding a Rocket phone, very strangely. So you could see the fact that it said Rocket on the back of it. If you remember the old Nintendo 3DS, it used the same sort of screen technology as that to make basically the screen a bit 3D. Otherwise, apparently they were quite pants as phones. However, Atlassian are a bit of a practical choice of a partner too. As a software and technology company, they will be vital when it comes to helping Williams move their technology and infrastructure into the modern age. 2025 so far has been their first year in a while where they have also run out of season testing of a previous car. Certainly their first time doing it in the modern era of Formula One as well, in the last few iterations of the car. So again, these sort of lower rung teams, as you said, with the cost cap, making these steps up, moving on forwards, and it's great.
It is great, isn't it? And I think Williams can be really competitive this year. You know, we're looking at testing, they could potentially be there or thereabouts at the beginning of the midfield. So they've got the best driver lineup they've had in a long time. How far would you go back, Jesse? How what would you say? Probably the best since Massa and Bottas in 20, was that 2016? That would have been. Do you think that's the
Yeah, I want to say
fair to say?
mid-2010s. Yeah, mid-2010s would be about as good as it gets.
So I listen, I think Williams as a team are heading in the right direction. I think James Vowles deserves, or Jimmy V, as we should be calling him these days, he deserves a lot of credit for the job that he's done at Williams. And you know, they've already said 2026 is our year. Let's see if they can carry some momentum from 2025 into 2026. And I'm really excited to see what they can do next season. Can they be back to the podium and back to potentially winning races? That'd be quite something, wouldn't it?
That would be something incredible indeed. And I genuinely think we might see a Williams on the podium this year.
This
Certainly, they're going to
year.
be this year. I reckon we're going to see them one on the podium this year. I reckon we'll see them regularly contesting for points. Yeah, that we're doing well. We'll move on to another team. I've sort of ended up structuring this kind of team by team. And this is news from Aston Martin as Andy Cowell replaces Mike Crack as the team principal. You might have gotten some of the jokes from Jack Whitehall at the F1 Live event. This is Cowell stepping into the role of CEO. Cowell joined Cosworth on their engine development team straight out of uni way back when. And from there, he worked with Stewart BMW before returning to Cosworth and then Ilmor. Ilmor then led him into Mercedes in a variety of roles that oversaw their engines through from 2008 through 2020. If you've never read up on Ilmor as an engineering department, I recommend doing it because they have got an incredible series of engines they've built for Mercedes and Formula One. Also, I think they've, as an engine supplier, won a huge amount of IndyCar. Genuinely brilliant engineering, but that's again getting sidetracked. While Andy Cowell was at Mercedes, his stewardship of the team and the Mercedes AMG High Performance Powertrains unit garnered the team 12 world titles in 6 years. So essentially one for driver and team. So doing well there. It's worth remembering that Mattia Binotto was an engine guy before becoming a team principal. So it's not an unusual pathway to go through, but Binotto was also up against the strange structure of Ferrari. So take that comparison with a pinch of salt. Oddly enough, this makes December 2022 appointee Andrea Stella at McLaren the third longest serving team principal now. In
Ridiculous.
other Aston Martin news, Adrian Newey has finally started his new role at Silverstone earlier this week, 3rd of March, and on his £3,424 an hour salary, assuming he started at 9 a.m. on Monday, this means at the time of recording, he's already earned £284,192, over a quarter of £1 million in, like, what's that, 2, 3.5 days work, 4.5 days
That is
work?
ridiculous.
Yeah, I want what he's being
Absolutely
paid.
outrageous.
When you compare this to touted driver salaries, only Verstappen, Hamilton, and Leclerc outrank him for salary, 52, 48, and £27 million, respectively. Alonso is just behind Newey's 20 million on £18 million. So clearly, they're putting a lot of faith into what Newey can do with a pencil.
I mean, listen, if Lawrence Stroll, by the way, is the one who's, you know, made the change with Andy Cowell and Mike Crack, I definitely wouldn't be arguing with that guy. What he says, I would be doing, because he is a scary bloke, isn't he? So, listen, I think Andy Cowell got being ill, moving to CEO role, and Mike Crack focusing on the race team. I think that's it. You know, it sounds like it plays to both of their strengths. So, you know, I don't think we'll see too much of a difference, to be fair, from a fan perspective, with that. But I think Lawrence Stroll is, brilliant at getting the right people in the right jobs. And I think if he's done this, there's obviously a purpose behind it. And I think it'd be really interesting to see. He's shaping a group of people to go for the championship, isn't he? He's getting all of the jigsaw pieces in place. Nui is a big part of that jigsaw puzzle. Obviously, Andy Carroll being CEO now and team principal. Mike Crack focusing on his strength, which is the race team and the operational side of the race team. He's got Fernando Alonso there already. Is Max Verstappen the last piece of the jigsaw puzzle? Well, let's wait and see. Rumors of him being bought in on a, was it £1 billion they were talking?
It
£1 billion contract.
was possibly something that quite big, but also at the same time, Toto Wolff has said that he's been sort of looking to restart conversations with Max Verstappen, and you've got to think, oh, still hot property on the grid, and people are going to want to know what he's going to get up to post Red Bull, because
Absolutely.
importantly, drivers that have won championships driving Adrian Newey designed cars after Newey left the team never won a championship again. So, bear that in mind when you open up your Sky Bet account later to put some thought to happen.
I think, listen, Adrian Newey, obviously a huge part of any driver's success. And I think he'll do a really good job at Aston Martin. Whether he can impact the 2025 car for Aston Martin, I think that's, up in the air. It looks like Aston Martin. I don't know if you've taken a little look at their car, Jesse, but it looks a very basic car. They've stripped off a lot of the some of the designs that they've had from the 2024 car, that evolution of the 2023 car that started the season so well. They've obviously gone in the wrong direction with some of their bits that they've put on the car. They've stripped it all off, and there's a very basic Aston Martin. And I wonder whether that is to essentially give Adrian Newey the freedom to say, right, this is what you can add to make the car go quicker, and we'll see potentially Adrian Newey having a bit of an impact on the car as soon as mid-season or towards the end of this season. But 2026 is going to be the big one, isn't it? And Fernando Alonso is going to be desperately hoping that Adrian Newey can design a good car for 2026.
Oh, Alonso's going to be chomping at the bit for next season. I think it's interesting how Aston Martin have done that sort of car reset, and sort of a bit like Red Bull did, where they sort of picked the wrong development pathway to go down and felt that it opened up more flaws than it did problems it solved. So I think obviously what Aston Martin have done is sort of step it back a bit and sort of just basically gone to Adrian and go, what do you remember you did to that Red Bull? Can you do it to this? And then we'll sort of work from there. Obviously, Aston Martin also hired a lot of Red Bull engineers and things in the sort of past 2, 3 years. So they've been building up a team that also Newey's going to be familiar with, and a team that are going to be familiar with Newey's unique work patterns as well. So there is a, like you said, Lawrence Stroll has put in place a very good sort of stash of engineers, designers, mechanics to build something quite impressive. Meanwhile, over at Scuderia Ferrari, Zhou has signed on with the team. Having left Sauber, the former Ferrari Driver Academy driver has returned to the Scuderia as their test and reserve driver alongside Antonio Giovinazzi. The Scuderia has a healthy pool of drivers on the boil now, with some of the aforementioned, as well as Dino Beganovic, having taken on some TPC in the off-season too. Maja Verk has also been retained by the outfit as she moves teams in Formula One Academy. She recently spoke about the odd step of joining the series, despite having already seen success in Freca. So having enjoyed, she's basically just enjoying the spotlight the Formula One Academy brings, that while expensive, it does seem to be opening some important doors. So there's sort of steps in the right direction when it comes to publicity and stages for her. But meanwhile, it's sort of all systems go for Ferrari, who earlier today were had Lewis Hamilton and Charles Leclerc doing burnouts in the center of Milan.
There was an unbelievable clip of Charles Leclerc coming around the corner and throwing it into a donut. What a view that those particular fans had. Yeah, the Zhou thing, I wouldn't say the Zhou thing surprised me. Obviously, as you say, he was a Ferrari junior before he, all the way up until I think he was in Formula 3, wasn't he? So, yeah, it didn't surprise me. What I can't get my head around and I can't picture is if Charles Leclerc or Lewis Hamilton were to get ill, for example, or they were to miss a race, I just can't picture Zhou Guanyu in a Ferrari driving a Ferrari and actually racing in a Ferrari. I just can't picture it. But listen, a good move for Zhou. It kind of made sense. I'm glad that he's still around the paddock because a great guy, a great personality, and obviously China is an important part of the world for Formula One, if you like, from a commercial perspective. So I'm glad that he's stuck around. And yeah, I think Ferrari, They just seem to be heading in the right direction in every sense, don't they? The team has a real buzz around it. And I'm really excited. Obviously, I'm excited to see Lewis Hamilton driving in a Ferrari this year. It's going to be iconic. But just Ferrari in general, Fred Vasseur has really got that team sorted operationally, in my opinion. So I'm excited to see what Ferrari can do this year.
Every decision they seem to make has been thought out. It's got a
Yeah.
long-term plan feel to it, and it's revitalized the way people think about it, and it is sort of quite tempting, really. Meanwhile, Zhou's former teammate Valtteri Bottas has rejoined Mercedes as their reserve driver, though Toto Wolff has ruled out the Finn producing any more of his charity nude calendars. The mullet is allowed to stay, which I think is a bit of a shame. They've sort of Bottas came out of Mercedes and sort of came out of his shell hugely when he moved to Sauber, and we saw this sort of quite vibrant and fun character. And I don't want his return to Mercedes to sand off any of those really fun things, like the behind the scenes footage he did with sort of Australian content creators on TikToks and stuff. Looks like he's just genuinely enjoying life, and I just want the best for him. He's a precious son to me, and I don't want Mercedes to make him dull anymore.
He's just having a good time, isn't he? He's loving life. When Toto Wolff said that, I've seen, if you read the quote, it looks like he's being serious, but I think he was joking when he was talking about the new calendars. He then went on to reference the fact that it was for a great charity, a great cause. So I don't think Mercedes will clip Valtteri Bottas in terms of his personality that we've seen over the last couple of years. I certainly hope not. I think, bearing in mind he's going to be around a racetrack with not very many responsibilities over the next year or so, potentially longer, I'm excited to see some of the fun stuff that Valtteri Bottas gets up to. And I think the Mercedes social media team will be desperate to use him for content over the next little while, right?
Oh, they'll be looking for things for him to do. He's already been making some TikToks with him, and I hope they send him along to some fun events outside of Formula One. Send him to a couple of Goodwoods. I know they'll all be at Festival of Speed, but I'd love to see Bottas at Revival. I think he'd relish the dressing up, the fantasy realm of it all. It is a good bit of fun. Meanwhile, back at Bottas's old team, Alessandro Alunni Bravi is leaving his role as team rep and managing director of Kick Sauber, having been with the outfit since 2017. There is, however, at this point, or I haven't checked, no word on his replacement for his position or the tidying up of the rather chaotic management at Sauber. Meanwhile, Audi, who will enter the sport next year as that team, will also sponsor Sky Sports coverage of the series from 2025 through 2027, which is an interesting step.
Yeah, I thought the same. I thought, is that not a conflict of interest? But it seemed a bit odd, didn't it? But yeah, I think, listen, I think that project, the Sauber project, or the Sauber, sorry, the Sauber team at the moment seems a little bit of a mess, doesn't it? So I hope Mattia Binotto can start making some changes that moves the team in the right direction before they turn to Audi, because the Audi project is an exciting project. I was super excited when it was announced that Audi were going to be in Formula One, and I was thinking, brilliant, we've got another team that will have the budget and have the resource to challenge the top three, four teams, and I mean, as it looks at the moment, that team, not just in terms of the car, but just operationally, they seem just a little bit of a mess at the moment. I think you spoke about Aluma Bravi. It sounds like Jonathan Wheatley is going to be taking that role, doesn't it, as team principal. So I think he's on gardening leave at the moment, but he comes with a good reputation from Red Bull. He's part of I think for me, he's probably with his job role, he seems to be the one. We all talk about how well Max Verstappen knows the rules when it comes to wheel racing, and I believe he's been sitting down and Jonathan Whitney was the rules guy for Red Bull, right? He knew the rule book inside out. So I imagine that, yes, Max Verstappen probably did a lot of homework and he knows the rules inside out, but some of that will be conversations with Jonathan Whitney. So I'm really interested to see how Jonathan Whitney does as a team principal. I think he'll be brilliant. I think him and Mattia Binotto will work well together. And I just hope they can, move that team in the right direction, because I want Audi to do well. And I think it would be brilliant to have Audi doing well in Formula One from 2026 onwards.
Another sort of big motoring brand that will be able to step into that role and compete against the McLarens, the Mercedes, the Ferraris. That's where the sort of the impetus is for that one. It'll be interesting to see what the outcome is. Over at McLaren, as Peter Prodromo is staying on. The Woking outfit has extended their contract with their technical director and aerodynamicist, regarded as one of the key architects of their recent success. Prodromo began in Formula One in 1991 at McLaren before joining Red Bull in 2006 with Newey, and was Newey's chief designer throughout their four consecutive championships with Vettel. So he's an impressive and very practical man when it comes to making these designs work. And obviously, McLaren, much like their livery, not looking to change what's working for them.
Yeah, what's the saying? If it's not broke, don't fix it. It's let's wait and see. I think McLaren are in such a good place right now. I think they're likely. Would you say they're favourites for the championship this year? I'd say they are.
Yeah, I'd say sort of certainly from the enthusiast to sporting point of view, I'd say they are very much favourites. From a betting man's point of view, almost certainly favourites as well. I know we were having a look at the odds the other night,
Yeah.
and yeah, it's still looking very fair for McLaren to wrap this one up with a bit of ease, I should think. So we'll see how it pans out for them. I think they're on for a good shout.
Definitely.
Meanwhile, moving out of Formula One for a bit, there's a new team in Formula One Academy, and reverse grids are back. High Tech will join the series this year with two seats and will be running the wild card seats throughout the year as their third seat. Meanwhile, reverse grids are back, and it means the composition of the weekends remains largely the same, actually. Two free practices, one quali, and then race one is a reverse grid. Points to the top eight drivers: 10, 8, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And then race two is as normal: 25, 18, 15, 12, and so on, plus one for the fastest lap and two for pole. So, slightly different point spread. Obviously, you're not getting that second point for a second pole position in the first race. But otherwise, it's shaking things up. And again, putting them a bit more on par with the other feeder series that F1 Academy is supposed to be pushing these drivers towards. So, a bit more parity, a bit more similarity. It's all good news.
Definitely, it seems aligned, doesn't it? To, as you say, Formula 3, Formula 2, Fracker, for example, GB3. So, yeah, I think it's a good move all round. I was surprised to see the, obviously, Formula 1 have got rid of the fastest lap point for 2025. So, was I surprised? I don't know. Were you surprised to see fastest lap point?
I was a bit surprised. I think
Yeah.
obviously we'll still note fastest lap of the race, but
Yeah.
obviously if it's not getting points awarded for it, it's very interesting. I think what we were starting to see was a lot of that silly sort of gambling of sort of teams that are sort of further down the grid or sort of doing favors for other teams by stealing fastest lap points. We saw it famously with Daniel Ricciardo pitting for softs sort of 2 laps from the end in Singapore, and all
Yeah.
sorts of bits just to sort of nip and jibe at other teams. So maybe it was something that sort of had outlasted its usefulness. Maybe there were other reasons behind it. I reckon we'll probably see fastest lap points come back in. I reckon it'll be 5 years and it'll return because people will want to see it again, especially once we've gotten
Yeah.
used to the new technical situation. There could be something different that promotes that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's going to float around a bit in the
Yeah,
TV
definitely.
series.
I'm definitely
Otherwise.
glad to see it still in F1 Academy, though. I'm definitely still glad to see it in F1 Academy, and I think as well, the reverse grid is a nice touch for F1 Academy. I think that's brilliant, and I love reverse grid racing. And it's great to see High Tech in F1 Academy as well. I was surprised to not see them in F1 Academy from its outset, to be honest with you. So from its inception. So I'm glad that High Tech has taken a step into F1 Academy, and this it's great for the series, isn't it? So.
It's a good move for the series. Again, it opens up the more seats available, more opportunity for these sort of budding drivers coming through. And yeah, it's looking to be an interesting season with some of the drivers that are still in it. Obviously, a lot of drivers at the end of the last year had done their sort of 2 years capped, so have moved on. And again, we've got this wave of fresh blood and new faces I've got to go through and learn coming in. So that's going to be very exciting indeed. Speaking of people moving on, Johnny Herbert has left the FIA. His departure from his role as an F1 steward is being cited as due to it being incompatible with clashes with his media work, which is, I think, fair enough. I think there were a lot of people voicing concern as to Herbert's position in there. But at the same time, I think having a steward on that team who is a former driver is worthwhile. Obviously, you've got to try and eliminate bias. Most F1 drivers have got some sort of allegiance to a team, but I think there's got to be someone who's got the experience from inside that cockpit to be able to help guide judgment when it comes to handing out penalties, track limits, and on-track incursions.
Yeah, listen, best of luck to Johnny Herbert with his media commitment. It sounds like he's doing an awful lot of media this year if there's a lot of clashes. I think, With the stewards or the for me, I'm on the bandwagon of I'd like to. I know 24 races is a lot of races, but I think I would like to see a standard panel of stewards for the entire season, rather than us rotating the stewards every single race weekend. Because I think that's where, when we think of the lack of consistency in terms of decision making, I think that's where it comes from. You know, if we've got the same people making the same decisions, then you'd like to think there would be more consistency throughout the season. So I'm less worried about, with all due respect to Johnny Herbert, I'm less worried about that and more worried about us having consistency amongst the stewards and just having the same stewards all year round. I don't think there's that much, it's that difficult to, difficult an idea to kind of come up with to aid consistency there, no?
I think even then, if you had weren't able to have a full team that is sort of weekend in, weekend out, just have a core group of four might be
Yeah.
enough that are able to bring in that consistency from weekend to weekend. Then you can have local sort of sporting departments bringing in their own stewards that then go with it. But you've got that consistency in a core team, and that way just sort of lifts a bit of the pressure but retains sort of a good balance of it. Where we get to Formula 2 news, and this is a bit more your field. Obviously, sadly, the chronically online Christian Mansell has had to step back from his seat at Rona this season in Formula 2. Was it cited as family issues, I think it was, or just sort of changing personal situation, wasn't it, I think?
Personal circumstances is what it was said. So yeah, he's taken a step back for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, so I think we wish him well through what must be a challenging time, and hope to see him back in the series in good order. Meanwhile, Amaury Cordier will be replacing him for the foreseeable. Interesting name to return to. I think it was just the guy that was free and had the most money, dare I say, but that is the way Formula 2 works.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't surprised. I think there was a lot of Formula 2 drivers for in 2024 who, if they weren't returning to the series, they were going off to do other things. I mean, obviously you had five drivers stepping into Formula 1 for next season, but you look at Dennis Hauger, who went to Indy Next, for example. I think a lot of the driver and Enzo Fittipaldi also went, stateside as well. So there's a lot of drivers who already had plans for 2025. And if you look down the championship standings from last year, for example, then Henri Cordier was the highest finishing driver who didn't necessarily have any plans for this year. So I wasn't surprised by it. Yeah, money probably paid played a bit of a part in it as well. But I genuinely think he probably was the best available driver at short notice for Roden. So, but yeah, just echoing your thoughts, wishing Christian Mansell all the best, and I hope we do get to see him return to a racetrack very soon.
Yeah, best available driver sounds exactly like you've written a press release for Rodan there, justifying their argument. Anyway, we'll move into some other sports and a few other little zones as we round out this week's podcast. And we'll jump back to the 24 Hours of Daytona, where Nick Tandy completes the 24-hour race Grand Slam, taking the win with Porsche at Daytona in 2015. He obviously won Le Mans with Porsche in the 919 with Nico Hülkenberg and Earl Bamber. Nürburgring 2018, Porsche 911 GT3R with Frederick Makowiecki, Patrick Pilet, and Richard Leitz. And then Spa 2020, Porsche 911 GT3R, Earl Bamber, and Laurens Van Thuer. So, yeah, this rounds it out again. Laurens Van Thuer driving alongside him, along with Felipe Nasr in the 963. And yeah, it's really interesting stuff. Also, Nick Tandy, local lad to me. He's a Bedfordshire
Yeah.
chap. So, yeah, apart from my neck of the woods, which is probably.
Oh, nice. That's representative of your area then. Does that are you the second best driver to come out of your area, are you? Or
No, technically, I think Dan Weldon also takes the biscuit
okay.
for that one. Famous, I think it was, I don't think he was an IndyCar champ, but I know he won the 500 a couple of times over.
Yeah.
He was the lion when it came to IndyCar and a fantastic driver. Obviously, we saw St. Pete kick off last weekend, and they
Yeah.
recently renamed one of the roads on that circuit the Weldon Drive, wasn't it? So, beautiful touch. I think both his sons were there to sort of see it in. They're also racing in feeder series now. So,
Yeah,
yeah,
Sebastian
Weldon.
Weldon. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, Dan Weldon, interesting enough, went to my school,
Huh.
so he was obviously quite a few years above me. But yes, yeah, again, the other local names. I think that makes me certainly the third best driver in Bedfordshire.
I'm putting Sebastian above you. Sorry, Jesse. So you're gonna have to be fourth, mate.
Fourth.
That's
Okay, I'll take fourth. I don't
yeah.
think Sebastian lives in Bedfordshire, to be fair. I think
Oh, does
he
he not? Oh,
currently
you're
is
sitting
a
your third then.
that's.
It's all good. You're
Yeah,
third.
I'm claiming bronze. I'm on the podium. In other endurance news, Max has said he's open to racing with Alonso in the future at Le Le Mans. He mentioned needing a brace of drivers that are counter to his style for the best outfit. Max's out-and-out high-stress driving would be paired well with Alonso's more tactical approach. But who else would you like to see in this competitive pairing? If we were to, say, take Ford, who are returning to Le Mans with a hypercar in the near future, obviously Ford producing engines for Red Bull, Max Verstappen Red Bull driver, that's probably going to be a bit of a link. Alonso very much does what he wants to do these days. Driving alongside them, who's in that third seat, or who would you like to see in that third seat, rather?
Listen, if it's from a pure driving perspective, I think there's only one answer to that. I think you've got to say Lewis Hamilton, the other world champion on the grid, right? I think Fernando Alonso, Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton would be unbelievable to watch. But I can't imagine Lewis Hamilton going. I can't actually imagine him doing any racing after he retires from Formula One. I think he's just going to be that guy that just does Formula One, retires. He's not interested in any kind of endurance racing, going over to America, for example. The other option, the other person that came to my head just from a pure entertainment perspective is George Russell. Seems to have a bit of beef with Max Verstappen, seems to have not been, well, him and Fernando Alonso have a love-hate relationship whereby they're celebrating New Year's Eve together and then share, you know, not very happy with each other after Australia last year, for example, when Russell believes that Alonso was the reason that he ended up upside down in the middle of the Melbourne track. I think from a pure entertainment perspective, I think we stick George Russell in there.
I think Russell would be an interesting call. I think he'd enjoy the challenge of endurance racing. However, thinking even broader picture still, Daniel Ricciardo obviously gets on well with Max Verstappen, a relatively amicable guy, will get on well with Alonso. Crucially, he's already won the Monaco Grand Prix.
Put
him into a good hypercar for Le Mans. He wins Le Mans. He's only got the Indy 500 to do. He is one of the other drivers that everyone forgets is sort of 33% of the way to doing the Triple Crown. I don't know. He'd be an interesting one.
He's the type of driver that I could see doing endurance racing and I could see doing IndyCar as well. So that's really interesting you say that, because I could genuinely see him doing both of those racing. So
yeah, if we buy enough bottles of his Enchanté Rosé, we might be able to fund him getting a seat at Le Mans or at Indy for a couple of seasons' time. It does look quite tasty, that. I remember when I was a food tribe, I did try and levy my editor to pay for me to taste a bottle of his red when that came out. Unfortunately, that was met with little interest. I was like, oh, I wanted to try the wine. But anyway, different times. Meanwhile, in GB4, Kevin Magnussen's half-brother has stepped into it from karting. Luca Magnussen, the 15-year-old son of Jan Magnussen, is also Kevin's half-brother and now on the sort of road to Formula One, it seems. So clearly something in the blood there.
Absolutely. I mean, the Magnussen family, Jan Magnussen, obviously racing in Formula One back in the day as well, Kevin Magnussen. And we've got a third Magnussen in the world of racing. So GB4, obviously a good series. So it'd be good to see him do well in that series. And hopefully Nico Hülkenberg doesn't have a younger brother that's... I say that, they put their beef to one side and they were good friends as teammates, weren't they? But we don't want any more moments from Budapest back in the day, because, best of luck to Mini Magnussen, so...
I mean, if you want mini a mini Magnussen's, obviously you've got his two kids as well. I think the youngest, Laura, is always there. But there are all those fantastic photographs of just tiny Magnussen dumped in the sort of cockpit of the Formula One car. So it'll be interesting to see if we see her in Formula One Academy in a few years' time.
Final
news story on our list is actually I met Otmar Szafnauer back over the winter break. And nice guy, chatty. And he's working his way back to F1 actually has a bid for a 12th team, which is quite interesting. So we'll see how that progresses in time to come. He was at the January scramble at Bicester Heritage, heading there to see a friend's business, and also chirps up McLaren, who have a base there at Bicester, about taking on his data technology company as a partner. So some interesting stuff going on there, but yeah, managed to grab a selfie with him and had a good chat.
That's a cool little story, mate. I like that. I always thought that Otmar would be the... I thought when it was announced that Cadillac were rejoining the sport, I thought, oh, there you go, Otmar will be team principal there, and that's almost set in stone, but clearly not, no?
No, it doesn't seem to be heading that way. I don't know, I think there's other things that maybe people are thinking about for Cadillac. And again, if he's got works for ideas for a 12th team, we'll see how it goes. I did ask him whether he was sort of going to be reigniting sort of Prem or Hitech stepping up into that because they did have a bid in at the time. And he said, I don't think they're ever really going to make it. They didn't have the sort of the facilities, the funding, the support. Even if they had drivers with the big sponsorship, it
Yeah.
was never going to cut the mustard. So it's he had some interesting insights and was yeah, just one of those people you meet from the sport and go, oh, you're actually pretty sound. Cheers.
Quite
And
cool.
he had his Ford GT there, which was
Oh, yeah.
lovely and sort of finished in a really burnt orange. It looked absolutely fantastic. And it was a sort of a frosty winter's day with snow on the ground. And he had driven out this sort of, about 700, 800,000 pounds these days, those things. He had driven that out, parked it up, and everyone was sort of going, oh, that's really nice. And I just sort of spot him pottering along. And I sort of go, hi, can I have a selfie? So, yeah, he joins the long list of people from Formula One that I have met and can attest they are very nice. He goes in the same bracket as Jackie Stewart. There we go. It took a while to work through, but that is all we have time for with this recording. And with a bit of luck, Timo will have returned from going AWOL and Ellie Mae will have vanquished her medical demons. And we'll sit down to make some predictions for the season to come, as well as preview the Australian Grand Prix, which is fast approaching. In the meantime, Fraser, thank you for joining us. And where can the people find you if they'd like more Fraser?
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Jesse. Really appreciate it. And yeah, I hope you find Timo at some point soon. And I do hope Ellie Mae is feeling better as well. You can find me on Inside F2. So we are the number one, I'm going to say, well, F2 media outlet, if you like. So that is that a bit arrogant of me to say the number one? I mean, I say we're the only one because we're the only organisation or the only media outlet that solely focus on Formula 2, for example. Everyone else kind of seems to focus a little bit on Formula 2 and everything else. So, but anyway, yeah, we
I
are on
mean,
Inside F2. Yeah.
I could completely frag those ratings when you start to implement my predictions for the season, which could ruin it entirely and cripple your standings as professionals in the series. But yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, listen, on Inside F2, go and check us out on Instagram, X, for example, on YouTube as well. Lots of content on there. We did an interview with Joshua Dirksen recently, Sebastian Montoya, Jack Crawford, all of those are out now. We've had a season preview ahead of Formula 2 returning to Melbourne. With the new Formula 2 commentator Chris McCarthy and Tom Bellingham from P1, Matt and Tommy. So, yeah, lots going on with us at the moment, and we're looking forward to the F2 season starting at the same time as the F1 season. So.
Yeah, first time that it will have kicked off in Australia. So yeah, very nice stuff indeed. And if you want more from me, pick up Classic Car Weekly, listen to the podcast that I do with them, or head along to Goodwood. I'm there on the 19th at the motor circuit. It's a testing session, shaking down a mini ahead of the members meeting race weekend. So I'll be there inside the paddock and inside the pit wall, getting everything sorted for that car ahead of it going racing for the first time at members meeting. Otherwise, I'll be at things like the restoration show and just generally out and about. If there's cars, chances are I might be there. So yeah, I'll be busy. Ellie Mae and Timo, we don't know. Ellie Mae, she will be back. So we'll be back with some predictions and a preview of the Australian Grand Prix in due course. Fraser, thank you very much, and of course thank you very much all for listening. Remember to like, comment, subscribe, all the usual internet gubbins to never miss an edition of the Undercut Podcast.